John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning, everybody. Everybody's having a good Thursday so far as we get closer to the weekend and a chance to hopefully stay with some good weather. Kind of all that rain forecast did not really show up, only just a little bit, which wasn't too bad. So we got lots of stuff going on. So let's waste no time and get going with the five biggest stories of the day. And the top five is brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
And the right-hander's 0-2 pitch to Cano on the way. Swing and a miss for strike three. And the ball is dropped by Maley to throw down to first base, and the ball game is over. The Blue Jays come back, and they win game two of the three-game series, a final score of 5-2 in this series, all tied at 1-1.
And so this has got to be a little concerning. Of course, we're taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Mariners lose last night 5-2, but Juan Nicasio brought in, paid big money to be the setup guy, the guy that precedes Edwin Diaz, has not done well. I mean, he did come back. Remember, he had the bad game about a week ago where he gave up the two runs on the great start by James Paxton. You know, Paxton had the 16 strikeouts, and Nicasio gave up two runs. Well, last night, four runs he gave up. And so when you really look at it, according to Ryan Dibbish, in three out of his last four outings, you know, Nicasio has pitched a total of 31.3 innings and allowed seven runs, 12 hits, including seven doubles and a home run, and that was bad. So not real good. So last night it was a third of an inning, five hits, four runs. And at different points, his fastball, which, of course, remember the last time he wanted to come out, he was going to say, hey, if I can't throw at 97, I'm going to retire. And he got a big pitch at 97 and got over the top and got a strikeout. Well, he was down to 92 and 93. Where this is concerning is that, the bullpen has already taken some hits with injuries. You know, not as bad as last year, but it's a little bit thinner. And if Nicasio can't be the setup guy, that does slow things down a little bit. As far as Mariner hitting, not good. 1 of 10 with runners in scoring position. So Mariners are right now tied in that series 1-1 against Toronto. They come back and are going to play the game tonight, which of course is going to be critical to try to get that series win. They've only lost two series this year, and those have been at home, one to the Angels and then one to the Astros. But tonight they need to get this victory to try to get this victory on the road. So that'll be the big game for the Mariners, and that's Around the Diamond brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number two.
And the 0-2 pitch, swing, and a one-hopper to third. Seager's got it, toss across. Ball game is over. James Paxton has just thrown a no-hitter. The big lefty is getting mobbed out of the mound. The lefty from Lander, British Columbia, has thrown the sixth no-hitter in the history of the Seattle Mariners franchise. The young man from British Columbia throws a no-hitter against the Blue Jays north of the border here at Rogers Center in Toronto.
Well, that was such a big moment that the Mariners are going to celebrate it coming up here, and they're offering a $10 select view level seat, $30 for the main and club level to commemorate for the fans what happened with James Paxton. That's coming up next Friday, so they're celebrating all that. So commemorative items are going to be given away to honor the Paxton feat, the no-hitter, because, again, this was such a special event. It would have been great if it would have been at home, but the fact that it happened is just great anyways. And so $10 view seats that are going to be there, $30 main and club level seats, and a commemorative item for all fans in attendance. Get on that for next Friday, James Paxton night, I guess you could call it, at over at Safeco. And so today, Mike Leake will be going up against former Mariner J.A. Happ. Game time is going to be 4:07, the pregame at 3. Leake has now struggled in his last four starts. He's 1-3, 8.70 earned run average after having two wins to start the season and getting a 3.50 earned run average. So Leake trying to at least turn things around against the Toronto Blue Jays coming up tonight.
Number three.
I mean, there hasn't been any drop-off in my career yet. And, you know, teams my entire career had to double me, vice me, roll coverage. So they're going to have to do that or else they're going to pay.
And that's Brandon Marshall, who was in for a visit. Marshall, of course, joined us in the last year on Schooled with a Professor. And, you know, I'm kind of rooting for this signing to possibly happen. I mean, he's 6'4", 229 pounds, so he fits the void that they have for getting, you know, a big receiver. I know he's 34 years old. Where I'm kind of rooting for it, he's from East Liberty, about 5 miles away from where I grew up, and I really like him. I mean, the times that I've talked to him, whether he's with Chicago, the New York Jets, the New York Giants last year, I thought that this would be good. In fact, he was making the conversion last year from being a number one receiver to a number two receiver, and he thought it was going to go well because he had Odell Beckham Jr. But that's going to be one signing. We'll see if he was able to pass the physical. We'll see if they're going to be interested in signing him. But Brandon Marshall making that visit to Seattle, and that'll be interesting if they can get him. We'll talk to Bob Condotto about that possibility and how deep the team is at wide receiver.
Number four.
And so it would be a good thing, I think, for the NFL if Peyton Manning was involved in an ownership group. And I feel like it's going to head that way eventually, Chris.
Yes.
It's just a matter of which team. It's a matter of what opportunity. It's a matter of how much of the team he's going to own and how much involvement he's going to have. But you can't just give Peyton Manning a little involvement. He's going to take over. And again, I think that would be good.
And that's Mike Florio talking about the possibility of Peyton Manning getting back into the league, maybe in an ownership role and maybe in running the Carolina Panthers. Now, he's tied in with the biggest bidder on the team right now for $2.6 billion. And so Peyton Manning does have a chance to maybe get back in the league. He's been wanting to get back as a limited partner in some ways, also to have some kind of control. So stay tuned for that one. Another news in the National Football League, former Seahawk Derek Coleman signed a one-year deal with the Arizona Cardinals, and Stephen Jones of the Cowboys is talking about Dak Prescott and maybe seeing what kind of deal that he gets. He says they're going to pay him what he deserves. He's a fourth round pick, and certainly is going to be up here in another 2 years, this year and next year. But a good quarterback, but what do you pay him? That's what they got to figure out in Dallas.
Number five.
It's a travesty that those coaches didn't give Brad Stevens a single vote. It's petty.
A single vote in what?
The coaches voted for player, yeah, the coach of the year.
Okay,
coach. Association he did not basketball get, coaches.
Dwayne Casey deserves coach of the year. But to not give Brad Stevens a single vote is just petty jealousy.
Well, that's kind of interesting, but you know, you can see that Charles Barkley upset about the fact that Dwayne Casey, who had great success during the season, I mean, he did have the number one seed in the East. He did not do well in the playoffs, got beaten 4 out of 5 times by the Cleveland Cavaliers, but no votes go to Stevens, the Boston Celtics coach, so kind of interesting to see that debate, but coaches vote for the coach of the year, and Dwayne Casey wins it, but the weird part is a lot of people think that he very well could lose his job as head coach with that series loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And so everything's all set right now in the NBA. Sixers did not do well. They put up some good numbers, but still not enough to beat the Celtics last night. Celtics won 114-112. So it's all set. For the Eastern Conference Finals, it's going to be the Cavs going against the Celtics. That's going to be at 12:30 on Sunday. And then the Warriors go against the Rockets. That's going to be Monday at 6. So the NBA is all set. Hey, you can listen to my show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, coming up, we'll go under further review and, of course, get some thoughts from Brock and Salk and some things. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
And, of course, we review some of the big things going on in sports and kind of reflective today because I know one of the things that you kind of wonder about with the sad ending of unrestricted free agency, because unrestricted free agency ended on Tuesday, I think when you kind of look back and you can see that in a lot of ways, you know, the cost of last year's free agency, you know, turned out to really hurt this team a little bit or put it in a tough spot this year. And, of course, when you look and they had 7 free agents that they signed, clearly they hit big on Bradley McDougal, who they did re-sign. You know, after free agency in June, they were able to get Austin Davis. You know, he signed back as a candidate to be the backup quarterback. But Luke Joeckel, they paid $8 million, and he ended up not having been signed. He's still a street free agent right now, and so is Eddie Lacy, who they paid over $4 million to get in. Terrence Garvin, who did some good things on special teams and filling in as a backup, he ended up going to the Miami Dolphins. But I think when you look at, you can see, you know, nothing right now on Michael Wilhoit. And so when all of a sudden you go and a lot of the guys that you thought were, if they were not going to be re-signed, were going to get deals in free agency, didn't, the cost became pretty much such that they had to lose, I think, three fourth round picks and compensatory picks, because now they had to go out and sign about eight guys in unrestricted free agency after losing six. And so because of that, you know, they didn't get the full benefit, and it carried over. I know this morning Brock and Salk were talking a little bit about free agency in 2017, and here's what they had to say.
Seahawks did a lot in the sort of veteran portion of free agency last year. How will that affect them going forward?
Yeah, it didn't
forward?
Go well. Okay, so now if I'm telling you they can read the market well, this would be the other side. Which way? Which, this or that? Luke Joeckel, bad. Eddie Lacy, bad. Michael Wilhoit, bad. And not just bad necessarily last year on the field, which many of them were, bad that they're not even signed. So, you know, the hope was you'd sign a one-year deal. Luke Joeckel plays well, and guess what? He parlays that into a bigger deal, and then that compensatory scale balance, you know, falls on your side. Eddie Lacy, you hope, hey, man, incentivize it. You got a one-year deal here. Go explode. Go run for 800 yards and 10 touchdowns. You'll get a deal elsewhere. Nope, he doesn't have a deal elsewhere. Michael Wilhoit, come play for us. Start a bunch of games. Play at a high level. Go get a deal somewhere. Nope. None of those guys. And even if they sign now, one-year minimum deals will not help that compensatory sliding scale, as all of those guys remain unsigned.
I think it was the better expectation that you sign these guys to one-year deals. They either show you something like McDougal did, or you then have to kind of move on and then hope that you get something else. But the fact that, you know, there are about 140, 47 players or so that didn't get deals, and so that kind of puts it at a tough spot to see, okay, you know, they had to pay a price for it. And clearly it's like, okay, you know that John Snyder loves to play the compensatory game. I mean, he's very good at it. I mean, he tries to, you know, get things so that, you know, if they lose a player, then okay, they're going to get something in return. But what ends up happening when you have to now just take care of this year's team and sign more guys than you lose, I mean, you lose that chance to get some good draft choices. And of course, they could have got a fourth round pick for Jimmy Graham, could have been maybe a third, certainly two fourth round picks for two Richardsons, Sheldon Richardson, who now turns into a one-year rental that they could have maybe got a fourth round pick in return, but they didn't. This is all 2019. And the same thing for Paul Richardson. And so there was a price that last year's free agency paid that compared to this year. And so because of that, they lose the ability to get those compensatory picks. And Maura Dooley, I know that, you know, I probably linger on the compensatory picks too much, but when you're talking about three fourth round picks, that's a bunch.
Yeah, I know that you were kind of harping on that all off season, and you really thought that they were going to try to come out in the positive there, but in the long run, it didn't seem like that was as important to them as we maybe thought.
Well, again, you worry about you worry about 2019 and 2019, and obviously John Snyder is going to do a lot of planning for the present and the future. But you know, all of a sudden now, if these guys don't get you the compensatory picks and get something, you then have to just make sacrifices because you have to worry about your own team and getting the best team on field for this year. And so they went out and they signed eight free agents, a couple of them to multi-year deals, several others to one-year deals, and you know, I think they feel good about the free agent class, but what they weren't able to get was the value of the compensatory picks. But again, you take care of business now and worry about later, and that's clearly what they did. Because hey, if they would have had the fourth round picks, you know, they could have been involved in some extra trades if they wanted to do something, maybe, you know, get more picks for this year if they wanted to do it, maybe fill some void in that second round or maybe in the third round. But that was not going to be in the plans. It's just something that did not work out. And so much of it was that these guys just didn't get anything. I mean, you would figure if you're going to be Luke Joeckel, a former number one pick, maybe you get something. And again, even just the volume. I mean, for example, the way the compensatory picks go, as I mentioned, you have 3 fourth-round picks. Let's say that Luke Joeckel signed a one-year deal at $2 million. And let's say that Eddie Lacy gets a one-year deal at $2 million. You know, that would have at least balanced things so that if Will Hoyt would have gotten a deal for anything above the minimum, then they start to get some of those picks back. But that just did not happen. And that's just kind of what you have to do in trying to figure out what you need as far as the needs of your team this year. And they clearly had needs on the team this year that they took advantage of and tried to make some moves on.
John, I think we've seen in the past that on offense they had particularly the most trouble at getting free agents to fit in. I think everybody thinks that Graham was always a little bit of a mismatch. You know, you had the Percy Harvin thing, Eddie Lacy. Do you have any confidence maybe that now that there has been this changing of the guard and we have Schottenheimer and Solari in, that hopefully they're going to find better fits in free agency on the offense?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think that you can see there's a more of a focus. And again, this system worked well for so many years. And what I mean by the system is you have Tom Cable as your assistant head coach in charge of the running game, and you have Daryl Bevel as the offensive coordinator. But really, who's in charge? Who has final vote on everything? Obviously, it's going to be Pete Carroll, but he's going to defer to the offensive coaches. Now you have one clear voice. That clear voice is Brian Schottenheimer. What Brian Schottenheimer says goes, and that's that plan for now. And so because of that, you can look and you can see that it's like, all right, how do you structure things and what was going to be structured? And that's what they did in free agency. They went out and got help for the running game. You know, you got DJ Fluker, who went and coached with who played for Mike Solari with the New York Giants. And he's now the right guard and is going to be the blocking guard. He was brought in here for that sole purpose. They got out now and they signed Ed Dixon to be a blocking tight end, the best blocking tight end in free agency. And they drafted the best blocking tight end in college in Will Disley, who was available in the draft. And so that was the focus. They draft a running back. And so there's focus now that you can see of what they were able to pick up in free agency now centers over to where they are, you know, a clear voice. And so I think that it will certainly work out better. And then, you know, we'll see where Jaren Brown is going to be. You know, they sign him as a wide receiver. At the moment, he's the fourth wide receiver. So that was just the plan. And so I think it is going to work better. But, you know, that's the difficulty sometimes of trying to make everything work as best as you can, because, you know, you want to try to get as much talent as you can. And it would have been nice to get the compensatory picks, but that just wasn't going to be the case this year. And you worry about it. But I think that, you know, that's why where everybody in this town and other places still dwells on, boy, they needed to get these guys on the offensive line. Where they got themselves in a bind is that they had to fill other positions because they invested so much in trying to get the line fixed that they had to now start to work on the other positions. And unfortunately, it cost them some compensatory picks. But hey, if you win and you do well, that all takes care of itself. And if you have a guy that's good as John Snyder, he's going to be able to work things so that they can make up those picks with trade downs and all these different maneuvers. And so they'll be fine in that regard. So I think that should work very well for them. And that's, of course, under further review. Last year's free agent class really kind of costing a little bit this year, but it looks like they've addressed it and they've tried to make up for it. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, I thought Bob Condotta had some interesting things. We're going to talk to him from the Seattle Times first about the Brandon Marshall situation. And also, he got his 53-man roster pretty well the first one up. Thought there were some interesting things there. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton,
live from the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us in the Venue Kings hotline is Bob Condotta from the Seattle Times. And before we get into his 53-man roster, which, of course, I mean, I think those things are great. I mean, I love doing them. I love projecting them. You're never going to be 100% right, but, you know, there's a lot of fascinating things that come out. But before that, Bob, my buddy Brandon Marshall in town, 6'4", 229 pounds from East Liberty. Yeah. He grew up in that area, so I kind of know his area and all that stuff. What do you think the chances of them signing him are?
I think there is a chance. I'll put it that way. It sounds like there's definitely interest in it. They brought him in. He did have the ankle, which I don't think is that big of a deal going forward, but I think that's something that they got to get across. But I think there's a little bit of just you know, he'll be 34 years old, or he is 34 years old. And I think understanding how he would fit and making sure he would be on that same page, I think, with understanding what his role would be and how they would see it. I don't know that they would envision him coming in and being the number one receiver or anything like he was, you know, 4 years ago and things like that, but it would be maybe a little bit more of a situational role. They certainly could use, another red zone type target, obviously, with Jimmy Graham having moved on and things like that. So, I definitely think there's some interest there.
Yeah, I guess the question is going to be, how low of a pay is he going to take? Because I remember talking to him when he was with the Jets, and I mean, he realized once that pay starts going down, then he probably goes into broadcasting like he's done at least, a couple years ago, and can still continue to do. So, but boy, I mean, you talk about a fit. And I remember talking to him last year at the owners meeting. You know, he actually made a presentation to the owners in Phoenix, and he was the first player in NFL history to make a presentation to owners at an owner's meeting. And what he was talking about is the improving the relationship with players and all that. Did a good job. And I remember asking him, he says, how are you going to be accepting a role being a number two after all those years of being a number one? And his thought is, it's like, hey, I think it's going to be great. Odell Beckham is great. I can get on his other side, and I've always had double team coverage, and I can open some things up for him. And if I start doing well, maybe I get double team coverage. But he thinks it was going to help both. Unfortunately, everybody got hurt, and so they didn't get a chance to really explore. But I think he could be a good fit on this team.
Yeah, and you're right about the, something I guess I was sort of told was this would be one of those things where I think the Seahawks would lay out an offer and it would sort of be take it or take it or don't kind of thing. I don't know that the Seahawks would want to get into a real bidding kind of thing with him. And again, you're right. He will make a lot less money here than he was making with his previous contracts. And so I think that's another part of the visit. But obviously, if it got to the point where he's making the visit, I think he understands that enough to know that. So, but I think there's always wanting to have that face-to-face and do that. And it would be interesting to see. I know he's been flying to New York, I think it is, for the Inside the NFL shows the last few years, or he was playing in New York the last few years and was able to do those shows there. And so I don't know if he would want to continue to try to do some of the media stuff he's been doing during the season or not. Obviously, Seattle's as far as away as he could get from some of that. So I think there's a few things to have to get across here. But it's interesting to me just that the Seahawks are continuing to look at veteran players like this. I think there's a lot of people who think, they're in full rebuild mode and starting from scratch and all this kind of stuff. But, as they continue to do some of these things, I think it's obvious they feel a little bit differently about that, and they definitely think he's a guy who could come in and help them next season.
Which really goes now to your 53-man projections, because what I looked at, particularly what I found intriguing, because I wanted to see how you had it and other people are going to have it sorted out at wide receiver, and David Moore is an interesting prospect, but he right now is going to be your number five receiver on a team that's going to keep five receivers. And what that tells me, it's a little thin and probably can use another player at wide receiver, because again, a Marshall can fit in. I think if you have a choice between David Moore and a healthy Brandon Marshall, you may want Marshall, who arguably with his numbers will be a borderline Hall of Fame candidate. Clearly his playing time isn't going to be great, but what it showed me as far as how you kind of sorted it out at wide receiver, I mean, it's a good group, but it's kind of a thin group.
Yeah, I agree totally. I mean, you don't have much, other than the top three guys and in Baldwin, Lockett, and Jerron Brown. And Jerron Brown, we haven't seen the Seahawks uniform yet, but he does have a little bit of a track record to go on. But other than that, you're looking at guys that I was going to add it up, the combined catches of everybody else on the roster. It's not a whole lot, and you don't have a lot of proven bodies there at all. Part of the reason I kept David Moore on there is they made a pretty healthy investment in him last year, if you recall. There was another team that was going to come grab him off the practice squad late in the season. They promoted him to the 53-man roster so that he wouldn't leave. And so I think that showed that they have a lot of, a lot of interest in him. And I think if he does much of anything this year, depending on how the rest of the, what they add to the group between now and then, obviously. But I think he's a guy that they are really intrigued by just in terms of his body type and what he might be able to do there. So he'll, I think he's going to be a big, really big guy to watch in the preseason. And another guy, I had Marcus Johnson not making it, but I think he's going to be an interesting guy to watch too. The receiver they got in the Michael Bennett trade, and it sounded like he was a guy they'd had their eyes on for several years. Coming out of the draft, was a guy they they had their eyes on, a guy they think they could help quite a bit on special teams. So there is going to be, I think, some pretty good competition there at the bottom for those last few receiving spots. But like you say, it's a lot of guys that haven't done much in the NFL. So, you know, that will be the number one spot right now that you would look at, I think. I mean, either adding a veteran, as we, you know, with Brandon Marshall, they look like they might be wanting to do, or with other guys that might come along the rest of the way. And then especially if Doug Baldwin or Tyler Lockett or somebody got hurt, it would get real thin there in terms of experience.
Oh, no doubt. Well, here's one. The other thing, as I was going through this and looking at your cutdown list and all that, it showed me that, you know, there's not as much there's competition. There's no question. But this team is not as deep, clearly, as it was last year. Because, I mean, when you were doing yours last year, I mean, didn't you say it's like, well, there's 7 wide receivers and maybe 5. Which 2 aren't going to make it? And you look at the other positions. But you look at receiver, and here's David Moore creeping in as the number 5 guy, and he's a prospect. Then you look at the linebacking core, and that group's a little bit thin. I mean, when you were going through it, did you kind of feel that this team, you know, did not have as much depth as last year, and the competition, though good, may not be as intense as last year?
It's certainly depth that is not proven. Let's put it that way. You know, you don't know on some of these young guys, you know, maybe they're going to be better than we think they are, or maybe they see something in them that we just haven't seen yet is maybe a better way to say it. It's hard to say that David Moore isn't good or something because we just haven't seen him play yet. I think that's certainly the case in a number of spots. I mean, they've got to add a linebacker too, I would think, just for depth purposes and getting through training camp at some point. And maybe they will do that. Maybe there's some young guys they have their eyes on or something that maybe they'll do that with, and a couple of the other spots are that way. But no doubt, I mean, this is when you have the off season that they did, and you shed the kind of big name veterans that they did, and you're adding them with guys that don't have as big a proven track records, or you're relying on some young players, you know, like a tight end. You know, they're really hoping for big breakouts from guys like Nick Vinette, and, you know, maybe Tyrone Swoops makes the real big kind of leap that had them so interested in keeping him around all of last season on the practice squad and all of that. So, Pete Carroll, that this was sort of how they did it. You know, there's sort of that talk of they're back to the beginning sort of thing in 2010 and 2011 when, you know, there was a lot of guys that nobody knew much about, and then suddenly, you know, the midway through the 2011 season, all these young guys came together and started to form the team we saw win the Super Bowl 2 years later. You know, and I think there's some optimism within the Seahawks anyway that some of these guys that we don't know a whole lot about now can make that same sort of leap.
What were some of the toughest decisions as you were going through it?
Defensive line, certainly. A couple of guys there, how that whole thing is going to shake out. A cornerback, I went with Trey Flowers over Nico Thorpe. Thorpe has been a real, obviously a veteran guy the last couple of years, been a real big special teams guy, but I like the idea of what they're going to try to do with Trey Flowers, but it's hard to know yet. They've really only had him in camp and to do the thing, moving him to corner for a couple of days. So it's hard to know for sure how that transition is going to take, but I decided to go with that. So that was sort of a tough one for me there. Tight end, I maybe sort of just punted on that and had him keeping all 4 of them.
Tyrone Swoops looked good over the weekend. Yeah, because the Tyrone Swoops as a 4th looked good.
Yeah. For sure. And, you know, those guys all sort of do some different things. I mean, I think Swoops is a really athletic guy who could play in some different ways than maybe Nick Vinette would. You know, Will Disley with what they sort of the draft pick investment they made in him. I think that gives him a really good shot of making it. So, but that was a little bit, you know, when you just kind of look at it and you go with 4 tight ends. The spot where I kind of wrote this is fullback. I have no idea which fullback is going to make it, but I sort of feel like one of them will. So I sort of just went with the most veteran guy that they have there. But, you know, the sense I get, I mean, they have 4 of them in camp right now. I think with the kind of style they want to get back to being better at. I think some people sort of misinterpret a little bit when they talk about wanting to be a better running team. I don't think that means they want to run 70% of the time or anything like that. But they just want to be better at running when they do run it. And last year they really didn't have that sort of traditional fullback. It could be a really good lead blocker, and I think they want to get back to that this year. So I think one of those guys they have around, or maybe someone else that they find between now and then, will make it in that kind of role. But, you know, I just kind of went with Jolston Fowler because he's sort of the guy who's played the most out of all the guys that are on the roster right now.
Well, good stuff. I mean, Bob Condotta putting out the 53-man roster, the first projection, and, of course, there's going to be so many of those. Interesting times for the Seahawks, and, of course, minicamp. Well, not minicamp, but OTA's just around the way. Hey, Bob, thanks for joining us in the Venue Kings Hotline.
Sure. Anytime, John. Thanks. Bye.
Bob Condotta, Seattle Times. And you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we go behind the lines and talk NFL football. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Each day at 10:45, we go behind the lines, kind of reviewing what's going on in the National Football League, and lots of interesting things. A story out there today about Matt Patricia, you know, the head coach of the Detroit Lions. And I want to ask Mara about this because I'm trying to figure out how to feel, because obviously, you know, any kind of domestic violence just can't be tolerated, just cannot have it. And any type should be as penalized as hard as anybody should. But when you're talking about something in 1996 that's now starting to emerge, and there was a police report and all that, and we don't know, you know, how bad it was. He's vehemently denying all that happens. I mean, how do you think we should take this? I mean, this is something that is, you know, 22 years old. Here's Matt Patricia that, you know, has been, you know, quietly working his way to a point where he should get a head coaching job and did get a head coaching job in Detroit. But a 22-year-old offense, how should we take this?
Well, I don't think it was domestic violence. It was a sexual assault case. Apparently, when he was in Texas on spring break, when he was about 21, it's tough because apparently the complainant dropped the charges. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that doesn't mean it didn't happen. A lot of times, defendants get scared. The accuser gets scared. But it's kind of, you know, he said he doesn't like the fact that he didn't get a chance to go to court and dispute it and prove his innocence. But it's at this point, I think the way that the NFL has dealt with it, as far as players that have gotten in trouble, if they, you know, don't get in trouble, if they don't get convicted of anything, unless, you know, it's like in Ezekiel Elliott's case where the NFL can step in and find their own evidence, I don't really think they can do anything about it now.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think is so tough to judge. And, of course, it was such a different time back then, 22 years ago, that, you know, it's not the as open as it is now where, I mean, you could feel more natural about putting in a complaint. I mean, it was so much tougher back then. And so there's so many things that you don't know and weren't going to be able to find out in a case like this. And then, of course, he was 21 years old. You don't know. But, again, you could see he was very impassioned at his press conference today. You can see that the league is going to look into it. The team is going to look into it. They made a statement about it.
I am surprised the Lions said that they did a background check and did not find this.
Yeah, which is...
Even though it's old.
No, did you see... In fact, this one's bad on that part of it, because I saw that they said, well, we did a background check and didn't find anything else about it. Somebody else within like 30 seconds was able to find the police report. Within 30 seconds, I mean, however they did it, they knew how to do it and did it in such a fast time. And so that one looks a little shaky from the Lions' standpoint.
Yeah, well, the NFL has all these, you know, former policemen that they hired do these investigations like
FBI
they did with
people.
Ezekiel Elliott. It's hard for me to believe that they didn't do their due diligence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
hiring him.
Yeah, but I mean, I like him as a coach. I kind of root for him to do something because, again, I think, you know, what happens now is everybody is so enamored by hiring offensive coaches that the defensive coaches don't get their due. Like a Terrell Austin, for example. You know, he was the Detroit's defensive coordinator, and I thought he should have been a candidate for the head coaching job. He has to now go to Cincinnati and be defensive coordinator. I think he deserves a chance to be a head coach. I think a lot more defensive coaches. And look at some of the success stories in the National Football League. So many of them are defensive coaches. But we'll see how it goes for Patricia. But again, a 22-year-old case that was brought up. Also, now the other story coming out is that they're going to announce at the owners' meeting in Atlanta where next year's draft is going to be. And it looks as though you can see that, believe it or not, Nashville has emerged as the leading candidate. And that's beating out several other cities that want to get in there. And what would be fascinating, wouldn't it be interesting to see if indeed Peyton Manning can get in some purchase of the Carolina Panthers and be involved with that draft, with it being in Nashville, with him being a Tennessee guy? How fascinating would that be?
That would be interesting. He's been suspiciously quiet and out of the limelight lately, I feel like.
Well, of course, I mean, he was in the limelight a little bit in the sense that, you know, they wanted him to be Monday Night Football. That was he was a candidate for that. And then he pulled his name out and decided not to do it. So, you know, he's You know, you notice he wants to get back in some capacity. He's had enough time away, and I think, you know, he's going to be weighing what opportunities. But I do think that he'll be back in the National Football League, and I think he'll be back in a very prominent role.
Are you thinking he's going to be more hands-on front office? Or
I remember talking to Patrick Smythe of the PR guy for the Denver Broncos, and what he told me about Peyton is, says, you know, Peyton would go through the building in Denver and he would go over to the equipment people and he says, you know, why do you have so much of this and so little of that? It's like, I know in most franchises, you know, they have this and this, and you don't have enough of this and you don't have enough of that. I mean, that is how attentive he is. I mean, he would go around and almost take notes about, you know, organizational things, not just on the football field, but in reality of what it would be if he were running a franchise. And so I think, you know, he's been thinking about this for some time, and I know that I'm sure that he's been approached by a lot of different people. I think it'd be great if he gets back, because I think that, you know, he'll be good for the game. I mean, look at the success of Ozzie Newsome, a former player. Look at the success of John Elway. And I know last week on School with the Professor, we talked to Al Smith, former linebacker with the Houston Oilers, who got into the front office for so many years in the Tennessee Titans. And we're talking about, you know, not enough players have been integrated into those spots.
Yeah, I'm wondering, John, Peyton had a reputation for being quite a bit of a perfectionist.
Yeah.
Do you think he would be more along the lines of, I feel like Elway is not as player friendly as you might expect for a former player. He got, you know, voted the least trustworthy in that poll USA Today did of the agents, or he was in the bottom three of the least trustworthy. And then I feel like John Lynch so far has seemed to be very player friendly.
Oh, yeah.
Where do you think Peyton Manning would fall on that spectrum?
I think he'd be right in the middle, because I think he's going to be fair but tough. And you bring up John Elway. Remember, John Elway was a guy that went to Peyton Manning and asked him to take a $2 million pay cut. I mean, you go to a Hall of Fame quarterback to a Hall of Fame quarterback, and he says, hey, I need you to take a pay cut. It's like, why? Well, because I want you to. And, you know, he would draw the line, and he would be unbudging, John Elway. But I think that, you know, Peyton would, you know, he would battle you, because, again, I mean, if you ever had an interview with Peyton, and I've been so fortunate to have so many, I mean, he'll not challenge you, because, again, he's very respectful. He's very good with the media. But it's like, you know, you're gonna be thinking as you're going through the interview with Peyton Manning, because he's going to make you think.
Do you think if things hadn't ended so ugly with him and the Colts that he would have maybe been involved in their organization?
Yeah, I would think so. And it wasn't ugly. I mean, it was disappointing, I'm sure, because, I mean, he was the face of the franchise. And, you know, Jim Irsay had to make a tough decision. I mean, they had a bad year without Peyton, with him being hurt, and they had the opportunity then to come in and draft Andrew Luck. I mean, how can you pass that up? And so he made that choice, and you can see that Andrew Luck was a great fit. And, of course, they just need to get offensive linemen around him to make it healthy. And I thought one of the interesting things, Stephen Holder, who's a beat writer for the Indianapolis Star, wrote, this might be, this year, the best offensive line that Andrew Luck has played around. You know, because, you know, they were able to, you know, draft better, do some things in the line, and maybe that can save him. Because, again, I think he is going to be back. I don't worry necessarily about his his throwing motion and all that stuff, even though he's been slow to get out there and throw the football. I think he's going to be fine.
Well, let's hope so. I think that he's an exciting enough player that we all kind of would like to see him at the top of his game and see what he's capable of.
Oh, yeah, no question. Again, he's such a great guy. And I think he's a great guy for the game. And I think John Elway is a great guy for this game because, again, look at the success he's had. I mean, he's been now to two Super Bowls. He lost one to Seattle, and he came back with a vengeance after that and learned it's like, I got to copy the Seahawks and what they've done on their defense with some of their personnel and some of their theories, and then got back and won. So I thought that was a great thing to do, and they did it with a Peyton Manning that was at the end of his career. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. By the way, it's also good to see that Derek Coleman was able to get another chance to come back. Atlanta didn't sign him as a fullback, but the Arizona Cardinals did, and so he'll be on the field coming up in another week or so once they start doing the OTA. So Derek Coleman, former Seahawk, getting back into National Football League. All right, coming up next, Mariners on a very important series going against the Toronto Blue Jays. Still, all that magic is there from what was there with James Paxton, but also concern about Juan Nicasio. Gary Hill from the broadcast will be joining us here to talk Mariner baseball. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.